Good morning. Today is Friday. It's the 16th of, 16th of September already.
Wow. Already.
This is Friday. It's like almost three quarters of the way punched out for this year. Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay. Joining us this morning, Director of Environmental Services. Ooh. I should be impressed, huh?
Oh, I don't know about that.
All right. Emily Sinkhorn from the city of Arcata. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to our mayhem.
Yeah.
And somehow you got the book.
Well, yes, I heard. that's not to say.
Is this a coup?
I was glad to hear that I wasn't. Somebody else missed earlier in the week. So
missing is our normal.
Yeah. I would think so.
Going places. All right. We can kind of bring that in. Why do we use the word or phrase freewheeler?
Freewheeler.
Yeah.
Seems like it would be in the 1920s when trucks were transporting lots of important goods and more trucks starting to be on the road and in the way, an extra wheel provided a bit more certainty to not hit pedestrians on the road.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Yeah. You're like Dolby. You just kind of make a story and it feels kind of like you're trying hard. Immense amounts of capital backed the original freewheeler of the highways. During the 1930s, you got close.
Oh, yeah.
During the 1930s, a drawing board outlined plans of a brand new kind of car. Built with the capacity to coast freely without being slowed by the engine, it was touted as capable of pulling the competition out of business, or putting the competition out of business. Several versions of the freewheeler went on the market and were briefly sensational. Then it was found out there were serious drawbacks to fast movement by the force of gravity alone. So many sets of brakes were burned out, and so many cars crashed, that automakers returned to the time-honored practice of linking wheels with motors. Abandoned by Detroit, the freewheeler survives in language as a tribute of sorts to what some engineers considered genius.
It's good to learn.
You got a lot closer
new
than you thought, didn't
okay,
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. let's see. Karen was here last month and was touting the new major project coming up that is, I guess, not replacing, but increasing capacity for the swamp. Is that your big project? I mean, your eyes are lighting up.
Yeah.
You're the one on this?
Yeah. Well, it's been a whole team effort over more than a decade to rehabilitate our existing Arcata wastewater treatment facility down at the marsh. And so the wastewater treatment facility includes both, mechanical processes as well as nature-based treatment wetlands and enhancement wetlands that many of us, think about when we go to the marsh and we see the treatment plant and we walk through the marshes.
No, we feed the mosquitoes.
Yeah, well, that too.
Oh. Is it still seen internationally the way that it was early on? I remember a couple decades ago, international folks would fly in to see what in the world was going on here, and there was almost a mystique around the whole facility. Is that still the case, or have others kind of supplanted that?
Yeah, our treatment regime is still unique and innovative, and again, that really started in the 80s with a couple, key folks that started a pilot project, and we really the city made the case that this utilizing nature-based wetlands would be able to achieve those water quality goals while also having kind of beneficial, impacts for wildlife and of, recycling that effluent to the bay. And since then, there have been other, jurisdictions along coastline that have, taken some of those ideas and incorporated into into their treatment facility. Last year had a call with a group in British Columbia that is looking to do, something similar and
road trip,
public access. So it certainly is continues to be, an option and an innovative option with this rehabilitation project. We did just last week, last Thursday, receive our last permit needed before we go to construction, and that was
how long did it take? Is that, presumably, yeah. Coastal Commission?
Yes.
How long did it take for that project to go through the process?
Yeah, we had started the work with Coastal Commission staff in about December of 2020. And before that were many, many steps and our CEQA process, but started the work with Coastal Commission staff in December 2020, and we received our permit last week. So it was a big lift both for city staff and Coastal Commission staff, and feel like we got to a great place and understanding. And we are now able to move forward with construction, hopefully this fall. But to get back to the innovative nature, one of the key things Karen Diemer talked about last month was that we're going to be disinfecting with ultraviolet light, UV. And so utilizing UV disinfection, in a also in conjunction with a, nature-based wetland treatment system is continues to be kind of on the cutting edge.
So you can get a suntan while you're giving blood.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be a little dangerous. But one of the key reasons that we are switching the disinfection is just not having to have as much chlorine gas on hand for disinfection, which is a hazard.
And the cost. Isn't it cheaper?
It will probably have able to be maintained, more in the long term.
Down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of seems to be cool. Yeah. Now, you mentioned CEQA, which preset the discussions with the Coastal Commission.
Yeah. Yeah. So if a project is being proposed by, any entity, then they work through the kind of first 30% of the design, so they know what their project is, they know where those project impacts would be, and then look at the potential environmental impacts of that project. And then that CEQA process really then informs additional permitting with particular agencies.
That triggers
First just laying out what the jurisdiction thinks its environmental impacts could be, and that's a public process. That's usually completed before then permitting agencies would be able to analyze in their purview.
It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Emily Sinkhorn from the city of Arcata. Emily, the project itself with the expanding, making better, increasing capacity, whatever we want to call it, renovating the water treatment plant, because it's an existing and you're making better, does that make the process simpler, easier, or do you have to go through the same gauntlet as if this was a brand new project?
Yeah, so this is a rehabilitation of our existing infrastructure, and we are changing some of our systems. We were just talking about disinfection, but we are renovating and not expanding our capacity. fortunately, with some of the upgrades that we are planning, we will have some additional capacity, plus all of our related work out in the collection system, out in the community, reducing the amount of infill and infiltration coming into our sewer pipes, which come in from leaking pipes, stormwater drains connected to the sewer.
You mean leaks?
Yeah, and leaks, yep, all of that. And really, but it's leaks of groundwater coming into the sewer pipes.
So it's water sneaking into the system.
So
it's not the system leaking out.
Yeah, so we have more of an issue of groundwater and seeping into our sewer pipes.
With the springs and everything, tidelands, whatever.
Yeah. And so
is this the clay pipes?
They're all different types of previous kind of pipes. It's lots of different materials. And we did have one project several years ago, about 4 years ago, that large project, multi-million, and we really made a difference on the amount of water, reducing the amount of groundwater seeping into our pipes, which then increases our capacity at our wastewater treatment plant in the winter because we don't have to treat all of that kind of groundwater coming in.
So there's that much native water that tries to get into the pipes? I mean, it's interesting that it would be either that prevalent or that there would be some kind of a magnetism that would be drawing in outside water through small opportunities.
Yes. So that really is a big difference between our dry weather flows and our wet weather flows. And this is common across all jurisdictions that manage wastewater.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. But really the technology has really come where we can line those pipes and really reduce that amount of flow. And so even though we're not greatly expanding capacity at the wastewater treatment plant through this rehabilitation project, we are gaining more capacity, particularly in the wet season, through these other projects out on the collection
system. You're just not letting the freeloaders get in, so to speak.
Yeah.
So with that, when it's completed, does that allow the additional building and infill and housing developments and all this other stuff that we're always hearing got to happen, and obviously with Humboldt now, is going to be happening in Arcata first?
Yeah. So our capacity at our wastewater treatment plant now is about, for these 2021, we were at about 34% of our capacity during the wet season, and less than 50% during the dry season. So we have a lot more capacity currently. So that is why the city has been supportive of developing new housing. We need new housing. We've heard that from the community again and again, and so as those projects are underway and are planning is underway in our new general plan, we are at the same time working on a feasibility study that would look at where we can add additional capacity in the future. And so we're
with the existing infrastructure?
Both within our existing infrastructure, would it be feasible to add additional capacity and systems at our existing location? Or what point is a trigger that we would need to relocate our treatment plant decades in the future?
That would be a big one.
That would be a big undertaking, but it's both, the city is looking at always future options and planning for infrastructure, and we need to be and are thinking about decades, down the line, even though it's a challenge.
So you don't have roads and circulation like Eureka has?
Oh, I think...
As an example?
Yeah.
There was a purchase of property towards the dunes last couple of years. Is that part of this whole project? Is there a tie-in there, or is it just buffer green space so that there'll be some more swamplands adjacent to the bay down the road?
Yeah, right now the city is working on acquiring an additional piece of property in the northwest corner of the marsh that is south of Samoa Boulevard, and it is part of the former industrial electric building on Samoa Boulevard.
Oh, the big one.
The big one, and it's a property right behind it, and so we're looking at acquiring that for open space values, potential future mitigation. Previous to that, there was the McDaniel Slough project that created more tidal influence into that, you know, section of our former diked tide lands. But this feasibility study will be looking at what our properties, you know, in the future that the city could look at acquiring if there is the, you know, the need to relocate further inland in the future.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. Hey, the fog's up. Very cool. Joining us this morning is Emily Sinkhorn from the City of Arcata. She's in charge of environmental services. Why do they call it environmental services?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think anything we do in that department is somewhat related to the environment. So we maintain all of our critical essential services. And so our wastewater treatment plant, water delivery and water treatment, ensuring all of our streets and utilities are maintained, as well as all of our parks and recreation programs, and managing our community forest.
So a bunch of normal things. Wouldn't it be cool if it was things were labeled normal?
Yeah, normal services.
It could just be
Department of Essential Services, but then it sort of sounds like the state. General
putting
services.
It to us, yeah. Hey, just the nomenclature often that's used.
I think it puts forward that Arcata community has been at the forefront of many sustainability efforts.
Yeah, but still, a lot most cities do the same thing.
Oh yeah,
you know, so it's like, you know, where do I go for water? Okay, and parks and rec.
Yes.
What?
We have a great team.
Yeah. And once you're there, somebody will point you where you have to go.
And I think we can get people to where they need to go pretty quickly. If you come into City Hall or call
just, our just some of us slow thinkers, huh? Yeah. Oh. So as you look at what is Arcata today, and you mentioned about planning out into the future, and it's tough to anticipate what the future is. Yeah, you're probably too young, but when the lottery came in, right, that was supposed to be extra money for education. After the Shell game happened, it really didn't give it too much extra money. It just, to education, it got extra money elsewhere. Trying to plan for human behavior in reactions to what's going on, lots of fortunes have been lost as well as made. How do you project out 50 years, 75 years with any kind of degree of confidence?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the first thing is we want to ensure that people that are living in Arcata today and our community have safe places to be active, connect with others, get exercise. And so we're planning for today's residents, as well as then knowing that we're in a pretty great location, you know, considering climate change and climate resiliency. So we know that, you know, we are probably going to be getting a lot more people attracted to this area.
You mean we've been discovered?
Yeah, we might have.
Yeah.
And I think that brings a lot of excitement, especially just with Cal Poly's expansion, brings a lot more diversity and young people.
Participation in economic development. Oh, it's just kind of a concept that hasn't been here in so long.
Yeah, so I think there's attracting a lot more creativity, and but there are kind of been challenges for how do we know what how many people will be here in the future. And so I think that's what we've really been focusing, you know, in my department, of looking for ensuring that people can get safely where they need to go without a car. If they don't have one, can't afford one, choose not to have one. So we're really focusing on expanding our trail system, including the Arcata, Annie, and Mary Trail right now, that's looking at connecting Valley West to downtown.
What is realistic to expect? I know, well, and you know too, there's been a brouhaha in Eureka about this. Well, people are going to ride their bikes. Well, I don't think riding bikes is going to be, for a majority of folks, an option. Okay. Skateboards, I don't know if you remember the skateboard issues that were, Arcata was looking at having a skateboard lane for a while. Okay. Walking, you know, a couple miles maybe.
Yeah.
4 or 5 miles round trip each day going to work or to the grocery store. You know, maybe if you're 20, if you're 60.
Or if you have 70. An e-bike, which are getting
a lot. Is
that
one of the scooters, or is that the one that the guys are riding in the bike lanes but are going 40 miles an hour?
Well, there's a lot of
people.
They kind
of have a little motor and they.
Yeah, it has a motor, you're pedaling, and it makes biking more of a, you know, a safe choice for exercising and transportation.
It's so, kind of like a motorcycle hybrid.
It's like a bike with a little extra assist with the electric motor.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think with all of these,
I think I understand.
With these different transportation modes that are popping up, is that people are interested in having a kind of easy and way to get around town. And we're still, you know, planning for car circulation. We're planning for all modes.
That's, I guess, one of the big challenges,
yeah.
Emily, is, okay, if budget was unlimited, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But it never is, nor should it be for most of our points of view.
Yeah.
So you got the maintenance of what is. Mm-hmm. You've got accommodations for some of these additional things. And at what point does one become the positive ROI and which one becomes a negative, or just throwing money into areas that people aren't that interested in?
Yeah, I mean, I think fortunately there's some, you know, separate funding sources for constructing new facilities. And so the city has been very successful at attracting state and federal money for expanding our trail system. And so that is going into funding our Annie and Mary Trail. But as you point out, often our maintenance funding is just coming from our general fund or from the state. And so that's why we need to make those kind of choices. Our city council adopted a complete streets policy this year, which outlines that any time that we maintain or repave a street, that we will look at ensuring that maintenance includes complete streets elements. So ensuring that repaving that street will allow for space for pedestrians to walk and can provide facilities for bikes.
So how do you do that without eminent domain and grabbing somebody's front yard?
Oh, yeah. We're staying within the public right-of-way that we have. Unfortunately, we have our making sure that we're keeping all that right-of-way that we have. You never know what in the future that we'd be able to connect to a different neighborhood or make the best use of that space.
Or the size rigs that are driving.
Oh, that is true. You know, and so some of that can just be with striping. We have the sharrows that are bikes with the arrows that really just give an indication to drivers that,
the bike
expect
lane?
Expect to have a bike here. They're called
bike lane, or it's actually in the lane itself.
They're called sharrows, and they're just like stencils that show a bike in the street, and it's really just to indicate to drivers that bikes may be sharing the same lane.
Oh, so they're not the outlines that they have with the yellow tape around.
Oh yeah,
them.
Definitely not that. It's to prevent that.
KINS News and Information Times 8.
Hi folks, Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Emily Sinkhorn from the City of Arcata. You said you wanted to get a couple of PR pops in, so here's your chance.
Yeah, well, there is always a lot going on in Arcata, but I think September is often a time where it's super busy. But this weekend, North Country Fair is back. And so this is such a long-time Arcata institution put on by the same old people. And it will be back this weekend.
Now, you can say that, and you don't get torched. I say same old people, and I get drilled.
Well, yeah, but I think that's their official name. And so it seems even legit to say it. And so this has been a festival put on for many decades, you know, celebration of art and community connectedness and a lot of makers. And so that's going on at the Arcata Plaza. And we also have been having a lot more activity and events at our Carlson Park on the Mad River in North Arcata in Valley West.
That's the one Valley West out towards the river?
Yes, yeah. And so it abuts the river. The city has received two state grants for improvements at that park, which we're really aiming to be able to start that construction by next summer. But this weekend, if you go by, there is a giant circus tent because the Flynn Creek Circus is in town. And it is an opportunity for families, people of all ages, to check out the circus and all the excitement that comes with the circus. But Carlson Park has really been a more of a community gathering place for flea markets, park maintenance, events.
Is it achieving the goal of making it comfortable for the community members?
Yes. And so our partner, Kuna, has adopted that front part of Carlson Park and has been putting on events. And so Kuna is a project of Cooperation Humboldt, and they're doing a lot of community engagement in Valley West. And they've been our partner with really enhancing kind of community use of Carlson Park. And that we're really planning eventually, hopefully by, you know, starting next summer, to have a playground and special event space there. It's already used a lot for special events, but also making improvements to the river access portion and to have a non-motorized boat launch. And so we're really aiming at
Canoes and kayaks?
Yeah, canoes and kayaks and like drift boats.
Regular
that you can
guy, kick, come on.
That you can count there.
Okay.
And we've really heard that the fishing community is excited about having another put-in location.
Yeah, an access point. Yeah.
As the Mad River is such a great, you know, steelhead and, you know,
once
fishing.
You get some water back into it. We'll,
yeah.
We'll
I'm
be
like,
okay.
Fingers crossed for this winter. But that is really, that's an exciting prospect. But the circus is there this weekend.
With the focus in Valley West, you've got the Humboldt did their thing. You guys have got a couple of those hotels. Is that working out? Are they hitting the numbers or the activities? Is everything kind of as hoped for, or there's still some fine tuning going on?
Yeah. So the Comfort Inn was leased by Cal Poly Humboldt, and students have moved in. And our partner Kuna had a barbecue for students over Labor Day weekend over at Valley West Park. And so really trying to bring that community of students into the Valley West community. And then there's two home key projects that are converting the two other, the former Red Roof Inn and Days Inn, into permanent supportive housing. And those projects are in the works. And those interior improvements are will just be starting.
The remodeling is just starting.
Yeah, the remodeling is just starting. And so those are going forward and going smoothly so far.
The other thing I was going to ask Karen about, so since you're here, you're in the target. the RV, I don't know what the ones that were along Samoa Boulevard that got relocated or pushed into another area. Is that working out also? I mean, out of sight for a lot of times means out of mind. Yeah, but managed was kind of the goal. Is that penciling out also?
Yeah, I would say what has been working out is the safe parking location, which is what the out front of that location, there were some unsanctioned parking. But the Safe Parking Program being led by Arcata House Partnership is going really well. And number of individuals and families have been part of that and then have gotten into more permanent housing following. We know that we continue to have the need for additional, housing and opportunity. Yeah. So we're still, that is still a key goal that we're working on across kind of all of our regional partners.
And, good. You know, maybe we can talk to Eureka about it too.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, Emily. See everybody on Monday.
Thank you.